Let's look at the Gemara Megillah on Daf Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph. We started that sugya yesterday. Torah Rabbanim Yimos Moshe V'Adram Gamliel Lo Hayu LeMeidin Torah Ela Me'umot Mishameis Ram Gamliel Yorad Choli LeOlam V'Hayu LeMeidin Torah Me'yushov V'Hayu Disnan Mishameis Ram Gamliel Batel Kavod HaTorah. So the Tevi Evan asks the following question. In the fifth parak in Masechta Erevin on Daf Nun Dalin Amud Beis, Tanya Ketzad Seder Mishnah Moshe Lomad Mipi Hagvuga Nichnas Aaron Shanolo Moshe Pirko Nistalik Aaron V'yoshav Lismol Moshe Elozer Yoshav Liamin Moshe Itamar B'chue. In any event, it's clear from the Braisa that they were sitting, the Talmidim was sitting. Alma Bimei Moshe Gufa Hayu Lemeidim B'yushav. So how can you tell me that up until Ram Gamliel they stood, they learned Talmud Torah in a standing position? So Sfas Emes writes that it's possible that Dafka Torah Shebichsav requires Amida, but not Torah Shebal Peh. And according to Sfas Emes, we could say that Rashi in Erevin, who writes Ketzad Seder HaMishnah, Ketzad Lomdu Yisrael Torah Shebal Peh, it would seem that Rashi's learning that the Seder was not just for Torah Shebichsav, but also Torah Shebal Peh. And for Keret, we could say the opposite, that maybe Rashi is saying, Ketzad Lomdu Yisrael Torah Shebal Peh, Dafka Torah Shebal Peh. And that would support the Sfas Emes, meaning if it was Torah Shebichsav, that wouldn't be the Seder, because they would require Amida. But the description, says Rashi, in this Braisa of the way the Torah was transmitted is referring to Torah Shebal Peh, therefore it was B'yeshiva. And now we understand that Torah Shebal Peh, you're allowed to learn B'yeshiva. The requirement of standing is only in Torah Shebichsav. However, if you take a look at the Rambam, in his introduction to Seder Zeroyim, he writes, Da, Ki chol mitzvah shenosan HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe nosna lo bipirusha. Any mitzvah that Hashem gave to Moshe, get it together with its commentary, its interpretation. Hoy omer lo haMitzvah, v'achar kach omer lo pirusha v'inyana. V'inyan limudo liYisrael nichnas elo b'tchila Aaron. Moshe ya omer lo haMitzvah hanasuna lo pamachas lamdu pirusha nichnasu achrav alozer v'itamar banov v'ya Moshe omer lahem masha omar li Aaron v'yistalku. It's clear from the Rambam that the Seder HaMishnah was inclusive, all inclusive. It was not just Torah Shebichsav, it was Torah Shebal Peh, Torah Shebichsav, everything. And yet, as we saw in the Bryce quoted in Erevin, in this transmission, they would be yeshiva. So to learn like Rashi, that the Seder was only Torah Shebal Peh, therefore it was be yeshiva, is not appropriate for the Rambam. I mean, it doesn't seem to coincide with the Rambam. The Rambam, on the other hand, seems to assume that it was the mitzvah, and there was Pirusha. There was Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. Now the Gemara says that Nimtza Biyad HaKol Arba, that everyone heard the Torah four times. Mikano Rab Lozar Chayv Adam L'Shanos Tamidov Arba Pa'omin. Now if you take a look in the Hagos Yavitz over there in Erevin, he writes, "Had the chayev adam l'shanos the tamid of arba pa'om, haynu dafka b'yemeihem, shehayu lomdim bal peh, mashen ken achshav shelomdim hakol b'chsav." In other words, everything was back in the day. Everything was transmitted orally. There was nothing written down, and therefore they had to do a chazara four times minimum. But today that we have sfarim, and it's written there, so we don't have to memorize it. We have it in writing, and we don't require four times chazor. Now, it could be that the chiv to teach Talmidim four times only relates to Torah Shebal Peh, not Torah Shebichsav. That would make sense according to the Ayvitz, because Torah Shebaktav we have written, we don't need four times Chazorah. Torah Shebaktav has to be memorized, and that's why we have to repeat it four times minimum. Now again, even though according to the Rambam, as we saw in Pirush HaMishnayis, the Iker Seder HaMishnah included both Torah Shebaktav and Torah Shebaktav, and the Chiv to review the lesson four times with the Talmidim is derived from that Seder Mishnah. So if that be the case, how can we say that the Chiyuv Dalet Pa'amim is only Torah Shebaal Peh? Could be that again, as far as reviewing it four times, that was only necessary for Torah Shebaal Peh. Obviously, every time the Torah was transmitted, it was transmitted both with Torah Shebaktav and Torah Shebaal Peh, but there was no need for that minimum Chazorah four times when we got to the Torah Shebaktav. So it means that whenever they reviewed the lesson four times, it was only for the purpose of Torah Shebaal Peh. If that be the case, then the first time that Moshe Rabbeinu transmitted the Torah, namely to Aaron, it says, Hayashon Eli Aaron Pirko, he taught Aaron whatever he had to learn, and Haya Aaron Omed. In other words, Aaron at this time was standing. And after Moshe Rabbeinu completed transmitting the Torah Pirko to Aaron, then Aaron went out and he sat on the left of Moshe, and he already fulfilled this requirement of receiving the Torah Me'umad. And once having fulfilled that requirement, he can now hear the Torah again be yeshiva. And even though Moshe Rabbeinu was going to still teach it three times over, three additional times, since he had already learned it once from Moshe, then he doesn't have to stand, because the next three times that Aaron receives the Torah from Moshe, he's receiving Torah Shebaal Peh. Right, because this Chazorah four times over is only for Torah Shebaal Peh. That's what we saw in the Yavetz, that because of the memory requirement, memorization, therefore you need Chazorah. But in the case of Torah Shebaktav, there was no need for Chazorah. So if the whole purpose and cue of Aaron hearing the Torah in the three subsequent transmissions was only for the sake of Torah Shebaal Peh, that required memorization and required review, then we go back to the Sfasemis that we started with, that with regard to Torah Shebaal Peh, there's no requirement of Amida. So it makes sense that Aaron would have stood to receive the Torah the first round, because that's Torah Shebaktav, and then he would sit for the remaining balance of three Chazoras, because that Chazor is only for Torah Shebaal Peh, and Torah Shebaal Peh does not require Amida. However, let's just think for a moment about the fundamental breakthrough here of the Sfas Emes to distinguish between Torah Shebaktav and Torah Shebaal Peh, that Torah Shebaal Peh does not require Amida. What's the source for this distinction? On the contrary, if the halacha of Amida is halacha in Kavanat Torah, it should apply logically to Torah Shebaal Peh as well. Moshe Rabbeinu was up on the mountain receiving the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 40 days and 40 nights. It would seem that that's basically Torah Shebaal Peh. And the Smag in his Hakdoma actually writes that because of Torah Shebaal Peh, he was there for 40 days, 40 nights. As far as Torah Shebaktav is concerned, if that was only what Moshe Rabbeinu had to receive, then he wouldn't need such a long period of time. Now, the Gemara in Megillah that we started with derives the law, the requirement of Amida from the transmission of the Torah to Moshe during that 40-day period al Ahar. The Gemara actually raises the following question. One pasuk siv, kasev echad omer, va'eshev bahar, va'kasev echad omer, va'nochi amadati bahar. Now again, if we're going to say that only Torah Shebichsav requires Amida, but Torah Shebalpeh you're allowed to learn the Yeshiva, the Gemara could have given a simple teretz that when it says Ve'esha Bahar, that means that when Moshe Rabbeinu for those 40 days was studying Torah Shebalpeh, therefore it was B'Yeshiva. When he learned Torah Shebichsav, then Anochi Amadati Bahar. The very fact that the Gemara doesn't reconcile this stira and psukim by differentiating between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh indicates that there's no difference between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh. And the underlying assumption is that all of the Torah is one corpus, and if it requires Amida, it should require Amida. If it's Yeshiva, Yeshiva. What's the reconciliation here that one pasuk says Anochi Amadati Bahar and the other pasuk says Vayesha Bahar? Now the Turiyevin writes that according to what Rava says, Rava distinguishes between Rachos and Kashos, Rachos mi Umad, v'Kashos mi Yushav. That when you're learning something that's relatively easy to comprehend, you can do it in a standing position. If you're studying something that requires a great deal of effort and serious contemplation, then you do it by yeshiva, you sit down, and that's more conducive to Iyun. That's called kashos. Now, the Turiyevin says, Hasam the kashos mairi, that perhaps when the Brisa in Erevin says that they sat during the transmission of Torah, maybe it was talking about a case of kashos, and Rava says kashos biyushav, that they would sit for kashos. Now, it's to reconcile the stirim psukim, whether Moshe stood or sat, Rava offers the solution that it depends whether it's rachos or kashos. Now, the strange thing is that the Seder HaMishnah mentioned in Erevin was on Kol HaTorah Kula. Moshe was studying, he was receiving the transmission of the Torah from Hashem, Mipi HaGvura. So it wasn't only on kashos. So to say that Moshe Rabbeinu's receiving what he's receiving is kashos, and therefore there was a heter yeshiva, that's the way the Turiyevin learns, is a very difficult position. And the Tanchuma at the beginning of Noach tells us that Lokaras HaKadosh Baruch Hu Brisim Yisrael El Al Torah Shebal Peh She Kashel Lilmot V'yesh Bat Tzar Godol Shehi Mishul L'Choshech V'lo Kibli Yisrael Satorat Shekof Olem Harki Gigis HaKadosh Baruch Hu will put the har on them V'yim Torah Al Torah Shebal Peh Al Torah Shebal Tzav Kof Olem Esahar Halo Mishosh Omer Lehem And the answer is there was no need for compulsion for Harke Gigas with regard to Torah Shebichsav, because ain't boy yigiv etzar v'himaat. Ela omer lahem al Torah Shebalpeh sheyesh ba dikduke mitzvos kalos v'chamuros v'aza kamoves v'kosher kisha ol kinosa. And there they needed kofalem Harke Gigas. Now, in this Tanchuma, we see a clear-cut distinction between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh. Torah Shebichsav is relatively easy. It doesn't have the Yigiyah, the Tsar. Torah Shebalpeh is Kosha Lilmod. It has Yigiyah and Tsar. So perhaps when Rava distinguishes between Rachos, which are Me'umad, and Kashos, which are Me'ushav, perhaps what he means is to distinguish between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh. And the fundamental distinction is not a distinction of chiluke dinim between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh, but rather Torah Shebichsav is like rachos, and that requires amida. Torah Shebalpeh is kashos, b'tzar b'yigia, and therefore you're allowed to learn it b'yeshiva. Perhaps that's what the Turiyevin has in mind when he says that the price of Seder HaMishnah and Erevin is talking about kashos. And even though, again, the Seder HaMishnah was on Kol HaTorah Kula that Moshe received Mipi HaGvura, but the Turiyevin holds that the Seder HaMishnah was for the purpose of Torah Shebalpeh L'chud, because there was no need to review Torah Shebichsav. You didn't have to memorize it. It was written. Torah Shebichsav is lo nege hach seder, lo naga hach seder. Why? Because there was no need for review. But if Torah Shebaal Peh, which needs review, is Kashos, therefore there was a heter for them to sit when they received the Torah Shebaal Peh. Again, this all makes sense according to Rava, who sets up a chiluk between Kashos and Rakos. Those who disagree with Rava, they don't make any distinction between Torah Shebaal Ksav and Torah Shebaal Peh. And then we come back to the question from Erevin that they learned everything from Moshe and Miyushav, and yet it's also to learn Torah B'Yeshiv. Going back to the Agadata for a moment on Daf Yudal, and in the few minutes that we have, the Gemara says, Gedola Hasoras Tabas Yosef Mimem Ches Neviyo Mizayin Neviyo. So the Mashal writes that the reason why, the main reason why Klal Yisrael did Tshuva was because of Hasoras Tabas. And what does this mean, Hasoras Tabas? L'chora, the Gemara could have said Gdola HaGzera, the Gzera itself. What's the emphasis here on Hasoras Tabas? Oh, you remember that? Very good.
Yeah, I do.
I'm impressed. So the Marshal says, Mishum Sheba Hasor Satabas Herach Hashverosh Es Sin Oso Hagdol Yisrael. And this idea that Achashverosh gave over to Haman all the authority to annihilate the Jews, this is very frightening to Klal Yisrael. It indicates the hatred of Achashverosh for the Jewish people. And the Medrash in Esther Rabbah says, Rabbonan Amen Achashverosh Soni Es Yisrael Yosef Mihaman Arasha. Achashverosh had an even greater hatred for the Jews than Haman. Min Hoge Shalol and Darka Shalokeach Litein Yiravon Lemocher Baram Hocha Mocher Nosin Yiravon. So this hatred of Achashverosh is what frightened the Jewish people. Then he quotes from Yonasan Eibishitz. He says the following: Vayiten Amelch es tabato lahama. Why does it say Vayosar HaMelech? What's the emphasis here? Could you, the Torah, the Megillah could have just said that the king gave over his tabas. What's Vayosar? He took off his tabas. So this is explained by that line in the Medrash, a kind of challenging line in the Medrash. It says HaMocher Nosein Eirovon Lelokeach. In other words, if I sell you something, you want to know it's a valid sale, so I give you, as a mocher, I give you to the lokech, I give you an eruv on some sort of guarantee. Hainu kevet sheyoda haman shachashverish hu hafchafach v'osu l'shanosus k'zeirosu l'mochar. Haman didn't rely on Achashverosh's decision because he might change his mind tomorrow. Ratzas tabato shachashverish v'yodo k'eruv. In other words, the fact that Haman would receive the tabas of Achashverosh, that would be a guarantee, so to speak. And therefore, even if the king himself would change his mind, and he would want to send out letters to vitiate the original letters, he wouldn't have the possibility to sign them because the tabas was given already to Haman. But on the other hand, if Haman... Right, so in Yichtov Hamelech Igros Achashverosh Lo Chosem Tabas Lo Yoilu Klum. Nobody's going to pay attention to letters that aren't sealed with the king's seal, and that's the bitachon, that's the security that Haman received from Achashverosh. That even if Achashverosh would change his mind and want to rescind the gzera, he won't have the ability to cancel the gzera. Therefore, the Gemara says Gedola Hasaras Tabas, because as far as the gzera itself is concerned, then the Jews would think that maybe they could be mevatel the gzeira. They'll somehow appeal to the compassion of the king. He'll change his mind, and he'll avoid the original gzeira. But once they heard that the king took off his tabas and gave it over to Haman, then they knew that there was almost no chance of salvation unless they did tshuva and they prayed to Hashem. Just the beautiful pshat of Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz. Now the Brisa says
that with all these Nevi'im and Nevi'os, lo pirsu v'lo hosiru chutz mi mikra Megillah. So the Iyun Yaakov, which is the commentary on Agadita, he asks the following. V'chima pirsu bazeh, why do you say lo pirsu? I mean, they were Mesakim Mikra Megillah. That's not called Pichsu. That's called Hosiru. So what's the Lashon of Pichsu that they subtracted, diminished? The Brisa should have just sufficed by saying Velos Hosiru. He says the following, that the Takana of Mikra Megillah generated an Iser Hespeh Vitainus. That was also an integral part of the Takana of Purim. And therefore, that's called pirsu, because they now have to diminish the mitzvah of hesped and tainus. And this seems to indicate that when it says chutz mi mikra Megillah, the words mikra Megillah are all encompassing. Mikra Megillah is the essence of Purim, but it includes the whole package deal of Purim. Like, for example, the Rambam, when he counts. Before the Rambam starts any set of halachas, he always has a minyan of mitzvahs. So in his minyan of mitzvahs for Purim, he has only one mitzvah. He doesn't separate it, you know, the mitzvah of Mishteh and Simcha, and then the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, because it's all one package. That's the Tzumo Shel Yom of Purim. Now he quotes the Ben Yehoyada of the Ben Yishai, and he says, I don't understand this Iyun Yaakov. Why would there be a mitzvah of tainus that now they're coming to be mevatel? Well, again, tainus could be for any number of reasons. A person could have a bad dream, you could have a tainus, or chas v'sholom, if there's an impending disaster, you have a tainus. So I don't know what bothers the Ben Ish Chai. He says, v'gam hesped eido mei haTorah. In other words, if we're dealing with the fact that you can't add to the Torah, well, Hesped is not a doraisa, so if they establish that these days would be mufka, would be excluded from Hesped, that's not undermining a Torah law. So why would it say lo pirsu mimasha kosum batorah? And therefore, he wants to suggest that maybe the Iyun Yaakov is talking about a case where a person took upon himself a neder to fast certain number of days, or perhaps a certain calendar date of the year, and then it turned out to be Purim. As far as the Torah law is concerned, he would have to be misan, he would have to fast, because he took upon himself a neder, and a neder obligates you in a Torah to fast. But now that there's a takana to read the Megillah, they're not allowed to fast. So therefore they were poches midivrei Torah. Again, I don't know how he answers the problem of hesped that I didn't catch. And then he writes that the Braisa might be referring to a case where, like the Gemara says on Daf Gimel, Mevatlim on Vodav Talmud Torah, Bar Lishma on Mikra Megillah. That's what the Braisa means by Pichsu, because they diminished Divrei Torah. They said that you have to terminate your Talmud Torah in order to come and learn, and in order to come and hear the Megillah. So again, so we have two different approaches as to what the Lo Pichsu means in the case of Purim. Because Purim is the first exception to the rule of Pichsu. So what was the Pichsu? The Yaakov seems to assume it's Tainus and Hesped. And the Ben Ish Chai seems to assume it's Talmud Torah. Because now as a result of Mikra Megillah, they're going to have to stop learning in order to come and hear the Torah. Rashi has a question. Why does this Braisa mention Mikra Megillah alone? Only Mikra Megillah exclusively. What about Ner Hanukkah? And Rashi answers that Ner Hanukkah was established after the period of Nevuah, whereas Mordechai was during the period of Nevuah. So when the Braisa says Lo Pirsu Lo Asiru Chutz Mi Mikra Megillah, it's referring to Bimei Hanavim. The Ran asks, well, what about many, many takanos, many, many isurim d'rabbanon? What do you mean, lo hosir? Why do you say that they didn't add anything? I mean, they added a lot. And he says that whenever the chachamim added an isur, or a gzera, or a takana, it's always a siyag. It's always a gedel aveira. It's trying to put a fence and distance us from an aveira. That has a smach min haTorah. The Torah says, "Ushmartem es mishmarti, asu mishmaris l'mishmarti." But mitzvahs mikra megillah is a mitzvah lifnei atzma. It's not a goder. It's not a siag. How did they have the right to do such a thing? Now, in the footnote here, he quotes the Sfas Emes, that there's a mitzvah owning Shabbos, and that's only Mirabbanan. So why is that not included here? Well, for example, the mitzvah Takon of Dalet Somos. I mean, all those are not Asur Mishmeres L'Mishmarti, they're not a Siyah. And yet they're not mentioned here. So the Sfas Emes himself suggests that, in truth, the Chachamim attacking many mitzvahs, but what the Brayson means, Chutzvi Mikra Megillah, is that Kriyas HaMegillah is the only mitzvah that's nitnoli kasev. That the mitzvah itself was given in such a way that it could be written in and included in Kisvei HaKodesh, Mashenkin Shar Mitzvahs. I'm not sure what he means by Shar Mitzvahs here, because Onik Shabbos, for example, is written in the Tanakh, or even the Dalet Somos, that's written in Sefer Zechariah. So I'm not sure what he means here. But there's Rashash, and Rashash says that we have a principle called Ein Novi Rashoi L'Chadish Dover Me'atzmo. In other words, to come and utilize Nevuah, Ruach HaKodesh, and say that I want to be Mechadish a new mitzvah, that you're not allowed to do, because Ein Novi Rashoi. But L'Takein V'Ligzar K'derech She'Chacham Mitaknim Yochel Gam HaNovi She'Nevi'im Lo Goru Mi'Chachamim U'Megillah Harei Nemer Baruch HaKodesh V'Chein Omer Sabraisa Chutz Mi'Mikra Megillah Ein Odover She'Tiknu HaNevi'im Al Yidei Ruach HaKodesh. So with regard to all the Takonos that Chachamim made, even if the Nevi'im were in charge of those Takonos, nevertheless it wasn't the Takona based on Ruach HaKodesh, but rather it was a takana based on chachma, on their chachma, they were chachamim. Because b'toras nevuah, they can't add to the mitzvahs. Ein novi rashoi l'chadish b'dava. However, in the case of Mikra Megillah, here we have the exception, that the Nevi'im established Mikra Megillah based on Ruach HaKodesh. And it's the only time that the Nevi'im made a takana based on Ruach HaKodesh. All the other takanas, if the Nevi'im are included, it's not because they are utilizing their Chachmas HaNevuah, but rather because they're utilizing and implementing their Chachmas HaTorah. A lot of very good material. Alright, we're now in Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph. If I can tell you that we're halfway down the Amud, that wouldn't help you probably. We're up to Vatikra Esther LeHasach. The first words in the line of Rav Yirmiyah, if you have the classical Gemara. And after Esther heard about Mordechai's fasting, she sent him a message with one of the Srisei HaMelech, and we'll soon see who that is. His name in the Tanakh is Hasach. So it says, Vatikra Esther LaHasach. Now keep in mind, what she says to Hasach, and the message she sends through Hasach to Mordechai, indicates that Hasach must have been one of us guys, because she revealed the whole secret of her Jewishness by sending this message to Mordechai, indicating that we have to do something to save the people. So therefore, Omar Rav insists that Hasach Zed Daniel. Daniel, who's obviously one of us, he was one of the Srisei HaMelech, and he was the one that she used as a shliach to send this message back to Mordechai. Now, as a matter of history, we know, and Rashi quotes it here, that Daniel was one of the Srisei HaMelech, one of the Chashuvim, back in the time of Belshazzar. And Gedulaso Himshicha Gam Bimei Malchusim Shel Daryavush Vekoresh Ad Achashverosh Shehoridu Migdulaso. So amongst the higher authorities in the high court and high society of government, Daniel was considered very chashuv. The one who cut him down was Achashverosh. Lama nikra shmo Hasach? Why does Megillah, instead of calling him Daniel, call him Hasach? Shechatchu migdulas, because in the time of Achashverosh, horidu migdulas, so they brought him down, they made him into one of the Sarisim. The Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that this was a punishment to Daniel because he gave Nebuchadnezzar a great piece of advice, and he told him to give tzedakah and to have a compassion for the poor people, and that would be a pediah for his chatoim. That would be like a tshuva kapara. So the Gemara Bava Basra says that he was punished and therefore he was cut down from his gedua. Shmuel seems to say just the opposite, that it's not that Shmuel was rejected and lowered in the time of Achashverosh. No, he was still very high up and very well respected by Achashverosh, to the extent that Dibri Malchus Mukhroim Alpiv, that he would make final decisions in Dibri Malchus. So it's interesting that the Chazal taking the word Hasach, and they're reading it as if it was Chatach, and Rav reads it as Chatach, means he was cut down. Shmuel reads it as Chatach, that he gave the final counsel. Now here in the Yalkut Biurim, he says the Pashtus Nira Lomash and Bein LeRav who Bein LeShmuel Hasach Zeh Daniel. Nobody argues that Hasach is Daniel. El Shenechleku, why is he called Hasach? Rav says because he was cut from his gedula during time of Achashverosh. Shmuel says because he was chotek in Yoni Malchus. However, if you look at the Gemara in Bava Basra that establishes that Daniel was punished because of the eitz that he gave to Nebuchadnezzar about tzedakah, and that was in Daniel's council, that was the way that Achashverosh, that Nebuchadnezzar could protect himself against Midas Adin. So the Gemara asks him, "Minolim de'ianish?" How do we know that in fact Daniel was punished? And the Gemara there quotes Rav that Chatoch, that Hasach was Daniel, and Nechtach migdulasa. So the Gemara asks over there, but according to Shmuel, who says that Direi Malchus Nechtach Malpiv, how are you going to explain that he was punished, that Daniel was punished? But in any event, the Gemara clearly indicates that both Rav and Shmuel identify Hasach as Daniel. Now the Maral authored a book on Megillah, and that's called Or Chadosh, and he writes in that book that Shmuel holds that Hasach is not Daniel, against everything we've been saying. But rather, Hasach is another person, he's a chashuv person, and Shmuel is saying that whoever he is Gzeres Malchus Nechtoch Malpiv. That's how high up he is, high ranking he is in the governmental circles. Now, why, according to Shmuel, if Hasach is another person, not Daniel, why would Esther have chosen him to be the shliach to Mordechai? And the answer is, says the Maral, ki rotzso lodia bazel Mordechai shechashiv lo miod ladas maze veal maze dover gadol etzla. She wanted to make a dramatic impression on Mordechai that this is critical, that she finds out what is going on. Had she sent a low-ranking figure, it wouldn't seem to be so chashuv in her mind. But the fact that she sent someone no less than Hasach is such a big shot, is that itself indicates that it's not just that she's mildly interested in finding out information, but that she's profoundly interested and she feels she must know what's going on. I'm a little bit perplexed here, because if, according to Maral, Shmuel identifies Hasach as someone else, then Lechori is not Jewish. So how could she have sent this message, which clearly indicates that, and she never revealed to anyone, that she was Jewish? Now he quotes the Sfas Emes that when it says about Daniel that Kol Divrei Malchus Neftoch Malpiv, and we're going back to the assumption that we're talking about Daniel, not the way Shmuel says that Asaf was someone other than Daniel, is Ein Hakavana Divrei Malchuso Shel Achashverosh. In other words, it's not possible that Achashverosh should transfer all the important decisions of Malchus. And lo yitochet sheyafkid es achlotos malchuso v'yecholos ligzar v'deyonon v'yimu adam choshu kolkach ein zeh shenishlach shaliach poshut el Mordechai el hakavona shekol divrei hamalchus nechtochim mishamayim al piv. So this is more of a metaphysical statement that Divrei Malchus will be nechtochen min hashamayim al piv, that Hashem will accept whatever Daniel decrees. So it's not the king, the physical king Achashverosh, he wouldn't have given over that to Daniel, but rather it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sherei hu zesh esider es hamalchios b'chalom Nebuchadnezzar. Right, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and in the dream there was a Seder Malchios, and that was all from Hashem. And in that dream, Seder Malchios, Nebuchadnezzar takes the Malchus from Belshazzar, and then Nosna Lamodai Uporas, Gamis Malchus Achashverosh, Shahoysa Gak Al Chatzia Olam, Yisitochin Lomar, Shehuze, Shechotach Osa, Bipitoron, Hachalom. Okay. Now getting back to the Gemara itself, it says the following. Vatikra Esther Lasoch, Vatitzaveu al Mordechai Ladas, Maze Vial Maze. And the Gemara darshins these words, Maze Vial Maze. Omram Yitzchak, Sholchalo, Esther sends to Mordechai a hint, if you will. Shema Ovru Yisrael al Chamisha Chumshei Torah. The Mazal Mazah is an allusion, is a symbolic reference to the five books of Moses, which are called Mizeh Umizeh. Dechsiv Umizeh Umizeh Heim Ksuvim. Now this is very strange, because that pasuk Mizeh Umizeh Heim Ksuvim is a reference to the Aseres HaDibros. So the Gemara uses it for Chamisha Chumshei Torah. So the Rosh Yosef of the Prima Golem, he says the following, and I think this is based on Rav Sadia Gaon, if I'm not mistaken. He says that all the Aseres HaDibros contain within them, in a hint form, in a remnant form, the entire corpus of the Torah, all 613 mitzvahs. So if Mizeh Mizeh Ksuvim is a reference to the Aseres HaDibros, could be read on both sides, then it's really a reference to Chamishei Chumshei Torah. I'm just going to close this door.
Try to keep the heat in here.
And now Esther wants to know what exactly is going on over here with this terrible tragedy that Mordechai is fasting, etc. So now Mordechai sends a message back through Hasach, requesting of Esther that she show up in front of the king and she pray on behalf of the people of Israel to destroy this, undermine this gezeirah. But Esther sends back a message and tells Hasach to tell Mordechai that she refuses to go into the king because she'll be beheaded for it, because there was a gezeirah that he can't go into the king. And then the pasuk says, "Vayagidu leMordechai es divrei Esther." Now, what's going on here? It doesn't say Asach. In the first pasuk, it says Vatikra Esther Asach. And when it comes to Mordechai finding out about what Esther had in mind and her refusal to go in front of the king, it says Vayagidu leMordechai. Somehow, Mordechai got the message. But it doesn't say that Asach himself brought the message back to Mordechai. V'ilu lo azal legabah. Hasach did not return to Mordechai. And this is to teach us an ethical principle, Mikansha Ein Meshivin Al HaKalkola. That as far as Minhagi Derech Eretz is, you don't go back to the Meshaleach, to the one who sent you, to tell him that you were a failure, you were a flop. You know, you were sent to get Esther to go into the king, and she refused, and you were a failure. In other words, I guess the Meshaleach should understand that if the Shliach didn't come back to tell him everything's fine, and Sisi Shlichu said, then the hint or the implication is that he did not fulfill his Shlichus. But you don't go back and actually tell him this. Now again, it could very well be that Asach was the one who told Mordechai. I don't know. We don't know exactly who told Mordechai. It just says Vayegidu Mordechai. But the Megillah went out of its way to hide the name of Asach in order to teach us this halacha. That he, Asach, did not want to notify Mordechai that this was a failed experiment. Lachelo Heshiv Asach leMordechai Shlichuso. Nor is it din that Chazok al Shliach Shechoser Shlichusa, meaning he goes back to Mashallah to notify him that everything was fulfilled and implemented. But Esther sent this message through Acherim. Again, who these Acherim are, we don't know. Now, the Marsha says that the word Acherim is in plural, which seems to indicate that she sent it with two people, not with one person. And he explains it the following. He says, Pirish, Estil lo sholcha dvarea v'yad acherim el ha-noshim shesviva sh'ro sh'asoch eina holich l'marachai holchu me'atzmam lo marlo. In other words, basically there was no reason for Esther to send two shluchim. She really wanted to send a message back through Hasach. Hasach would refuse to carry such a negative message. But once she mentioned it publicly, the people themselves around, they heard what she said, and they brought the message back to Mordechai. Again, we still have the kashrut before. If the people got the message that she would not refuse to go into the king, how could they not have figured out what was going on over there? I mean, this is right after the Gzeir of Haman. And what does Esther send back to Mordechai? Lech knosos kol Yehudim nitzav b'shusha v'tzuma alayvi al tochlu v'al tishtu shlosh nisyonim layla v'yom gamaniva naros ha'tzum kein u'b'chein avol ha'melech ad and then it says asher lo kedos. So the Gemara wants to understand what is this dos over here? And what does she mean lo kedos? And again, the simple pshat would have been that she had no right to go into the king because of the rule. And she therefore violated the dust of the king. But the Gemara assumes that that can't be so. That the kavana here is not dosei ha-melech, because then it should have said kidas ha-melech. And what's asher lo kidas? So let's take a look at the Gemara's answer. Omar Rabbi Abba, Shalo Kiddos Hoya. It was a change in her normal pattern. Shebechol Yom V'Yom, when she had an intimacy with Achashverosh, Achashverosh was the one who took the initiative. Arachshav, I'll add two words here, Nivalti Lamelech, Be'ones. The Achshav, Be'rotzel. But now I have to go into the king and have this relationship. So let's take a break for a moment. What's the status of a Jewish woman who's married and has a relationship with another man? Can she resume her relationship with her husband?
As long as he's not a kohen.
No, if she had it beratzon, then she cannot go back to. Now, you remember the Chazal say that she kept going back and forth from Achashverosh to Mordechai. So at this point, something is going to radically change. Until this moment in time, she was an onus. This is based on a sugya in Sanhedrin called Isha Karka Olam. You're familiar with that sugya. But now, she has to make the decision willingly to go into Achashverosh. From this point on, she becomes Asura Labaila. That's called Ech Labal Ech Laboel. And that's why she declares Vakasha Avadati Avadati. What is this double language? Avadati Avadati. I was lost. Meaning, to the same extent that from the moment I was ripped away from my family and I was taken into the palace of Achashverosh, now Kach Oved, Oved Mimcha, now I'm going to be ripped away from you, Mordechai, because I now become what's called an Eishes Isha Nivla Biratzon.
Now, a question here's, wouldn't she be, I mean, isn't a woman who engages in relationships with another man Chayav Misa as well? I mean, isn't there?
Well, let's just ask you a question, Eric, in a little different formulation. Okay. What was the permission here? According to Halacha, was she legally permitted to have this relationship with Achashverosh? And you know, some Rishonim want to say that this is called Hatzolas Kol Yisrael. That even though there's a din of Yehori Val Yavor for Gilui Arayis, but there's one exception, and that's for the sake of Hatzolas Klal Yisrael. But most Rishonim reject that. So the question is, what was the head to do this? Now, once you answer that question, you're going to have a problem, because then why should become Asur al Baila? Notice you're going to have to slice it right in a very, you know, with a very sharp knife. You're going to have to say that on the one hand, she was allowed to do what she did, but on the other hand, as a result, she becomes Asur al Baila. And for that, what you need to know is the Marik. There's a very famous Marik about Umala Ba'mal in the parish of Soto, which explains that's the source for a woman who had this relationship not going back to her husband. It says Umala Ba'mal. Now that kind of ratzon of Umala Ba'mal means if she decides, and even if she's halakhically okay, you know, for some reason, we don't know why, to have this relationship, that's already considered Umala Ba'mal. Do you follow? Umal Ba'mal is what we call a mitzius. It's a reality of ratzon. As soon as she decides to have a relationship with another man, she can no longer go back to her husband.
Okay.
Now, if you don't accept that she was permitted to have this relationship with Achashverosh based on Hatzolas Klal Yisrael, because Yehori Val Yavar always applies, and there's no heter whatsoever, you know, we don't say the ends justify the means, then you're going to have to come up with the Shita in Tosis and Ksubis, which means that a woman doesn't have to give up her life to avoid a relationship with a non-Jew. That's based on a pasuk called Zirmas Susim Zirmasam. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, the Machlokas Rebbeinu Tam and the Rivam and Tosis Ksubis, I think it's on Daf Gimel Amid Beis. Now, here it becomes very complicated, because if you're assuming that there's no Yehorik Val Yavar in the case of Bias Akum, then why is she Asur El Baila? Kasher Avodati Avodati. In fact, in that Tosfos, again, if we had an hour, we'd go through the Tosfos. Tosfos proves that Bias Akum is also included in Yehorik Val Yavar from the fact that she's Asur El Baila. But there is one opinion that says that there is no, I forget if it's Rabbeinu Tam or the Rivam right now, it escapes me, I think it's Rabbeinu Tam, who says that there's no Yehor Val Yavar in the case of Bias Akum.
What is Bias Akum?
Of having a relationship with a non-Jew. But Rabbeinu Tam still says that it's Umal of Amal. In other words, it still is a Maisa Bia that sets up what's called Ech Lebal Ech Leboel, meaning the Issa Tuma or the Issa Sota. So there's a very thin line over here between, on the one hand, saying that there's no din of Yehorik Val Yavar, I mean she didn't have to give up her life, and she was allowed to do what she did, but at the same time she has to suffer the repercussions, and she's Asur El Baila. So the Bias Goy, the relationship with Achashverosh, on the one hand, is not Gili Arayos, in the sense that it doesn't come under Yehorik Val Yavar, and she's allowed to do what she did. But on the other hand, it is Gili Harayis, insofar as it's a Maisa Bia, and if it's done Miritzona, and she makes that decision, that's enough to qualify as Umala Bamal and generate an Israel Baila. Now, I just want to know another thing here. What happened as after this Maisa? Did she actually sever or terminate our relationship with Mordechai? I don't know. You know, that's something that we have to keep in mind as we go through the sugya. Vayavar Mordechai vayaske chalasha tzimsal of Esther. So Esther commands that they fast for 3 days. But now the Gemara wants to know, what does vayavar mean? That the word vayavar sounds like some sort of an avera. Do you follow? Because it didn't have to say Vayavar Mordechai. It could have just said Mordechai Osa Kichol Shel Tziv. So what's the Yavar? There's an extra emphasis here. Omar Rav, here we have Machlok between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says she heavier Yom Rishon Shel Pesach B'Tainis. So it works like this. The Gzerah of Haman was on the 13th of Nisan. And that's when the Igros went out to destroy the Jewish people. On that very day, on that very day, Esther, after the dialogue back and forth with Mordechai, sends a message that we need 3 consecutive days of fasting. So the day after the 13th is the 14th, 15th, and 16th. On those 3 days they fasted. So it comes out that on the 15th of Nisan, which is the first day of Pesach, they were fasting. That's an avera. Meaning you're not allowed to fast on Yontif. Now, are you allowed to fast on Yontif or not? I don't know. I told you you're not allowed to, because that's what the Gemara seems to assume here. Truth is, to the best of my knowledge, you are allowed to fast on a Yontif on the very extenuating circumstances, and that is when your simcha or your fulfillment of Yontif could not be achieved through eating. Now, it's normally we assume ain simcha l'mavos of a yayin, but on the very extreme, unusual circumstances, like the Gemara says, we have what's called a tainus chalom, you had a bad dream, or for example, if for dietary reasons, you know, you just simply don't have an appetite, and all many different cases where they allow you to fast on Yontif. So again, you know, I always leave you with questions. I'm not very good at giving answers, but this is a question in my mind that the Megillah would call this an avera to fast on Yontif when I think you'd be allowed technically to fast on Yontif. I would think that if you're allowed to fast for a Titus Chalom, in this case with a Kal V'Chomer, you're allowed to fast when the whole nation of Israel is in the balance. Shmuel Omar, the Avar Arkuma Demaya. That the word avar doesn't mean avera, but it means to pass over. And it seems, does anybody know about Budapest? You know, Budapest are really two cities with the Danube River in the middle. So I didn't know this until now, but Shushan Purim is like, it's like Budapest. It was a river down there. So what happens is that since Mordechai has to get the word to all the Jews in Shushan, so he has to cross over. He has to cross over this river. And it doesn't say anything about Yontif over here. So I looked in the back, in the Yalkut Biurim, and he says the following. One second, where did I see it? Oh, Hasav Rashi. I always do that, sorry, at least I'm consistent. A second to get rid of this. Kevan she'igros hama nichtavu b'yud gimel b'nisan im keneskiu usanos b'mochas b'tzomim b'yudale b'tezvom b'tezayim u'b'tezayim b'erev nitla hama huchach rashi l'farsh kemishu d'la halon amrinan she'achre she'holich Haman es Mordechai berchovo seir shav Mordechai l'sako v'tani. So v'ayizem v'tezayim sharebo v'yom nitle Haman. So everything happened on that day of the 16th of Nisan. So we have the 14th, 15th, and 16th.
Wait, hold on. At the end of the third, because he was hung on this after the second Mishnah, right? So there were two and.
The first Mishnah, you said?
Yeah, because let's say
the Gzera was on the 13th, she invited him to a party on the 14th, then she invited him to party on the 15th, and then he was hung on the 16th. That's why I understand it.
Okay.
Let me just get through it, if you don't mind. So he says, Harei v'tezayin adayin is anu. So in other words, on the 16th, they were still fasting because, you know, the Yeshua had not yet taken place. Okay.
But I guess what I'm confused by is I always thought that the fast, because it says everyone go fast for 3 days, and she's going to fast as well, and then she'll go to the king. And this is during the 3 days.
Right, right. She starts fasting, and in her state of fasting, you have a good question. Did she eat at the banquet?
Yeah, and
that's a good question.
It also sounds like she would go after the 3 days of fasting.
Yeah.
That not during the 3 days.
I don't know. That I don't know. I'm just telling you what Rashi says, and you can.
Yeah, the pasuk seems to imply that she would go.
Okay.
You
know. Now. It says the following: according to Rav, Havir Yom Rishon Shal Pesach B'Tainus. Hatam Shemorachai Tzom B'Yontiv Yesh Lufar Shal Pima Shekosav Rashi Megillus Esther Shebala Chalom Gilul Mordechai Sheskima Elyonim Imgzeres Haman. So Rashi, in his commentary on Esther, has a medrash which I don't know that we have another source for this, that Mordechai had a dream that up in heaven they accepted the Gzera of Haman. And therefore, mikaven shal yidei chalom nodalo hare misane tainis chalom. Okay, so why is that called an aver? That was my question. I didn't know it was a tainis chalom. He says, Gozar Mordechai al am Yisrael tainis me'ein tainis chalom. So he adds the word me'ein tainis hayom because it's not a real tainis chalom. Only Mordechai had the chalom. But it's like a tainis chalom because he said that this is what's going to happen to the people of Israel. Okay, there's a lot more here in terms of the dates and how it all works out. I believe that if I get a chance, I'll plow through. This is a lot of very technical stuff here. The Marshal claims that the dates of Rashi just simply don't work because Balayla Hu Nodla Shnasa Melech was on Leil Pesach itself. That doesn't seem to reflect itself in Rashi. Okay, it goes on and on and on. Now, what else did I want to show you over here? Second, where was it? Okay. K'shem shavadati v'beis avakach oved mimcha. Shekein eishasi shenivala li'acher b'ratzon asura al-vayla k'din sota. Hikshom ha'farshon rei eilecha ones godol mizeh. She came Esther lo nivela mirtzona. She only did it for the sake of Atzolus Klal Yisrael. Why is that considered osa beratzon? And it generates an Israel bylaw. So I'm just hoping somebody will quote the Marik, and that would give me put a smile on my face. V'tirtzu, in the footnote he says Marik. Sha'omnam klapi shmaylo nechshav over. Again, he doesn't go as far as to say that it's mutter, I don't know, but it's not the same as also be rotzon. Ulon, it's a special din in Isu Sota Levaila, Shenemar Umol Abama. See that? The first time I heard this, I was 19 years old. I was learning by Ramosh Shapiro, as a
called the What is that phrase that.
In the Parshas Sota, in Parshas Noso, if you have a Chumash, you'll take a look. It says, Umala Bomal. And the Marik understood from this that's called Me'ila. He has a very strange case that the Marik was responding to. He was a Shalom Meshiv, and they asked him about a case of a woman who was convinced by a man that she had to have this relationship. And you know, he gave her the spoofs. He said, I'll be Kabbalah. He gave her a whole song and dance to convince her to submit herself to an adulterous relationship. So the Marik says that she's a Surah Levaila. Why? Because it's Umal Kabbalah. She made that decision.
Notably, Yehuda has a tshuva also where there's a bunch of people and they're bandits and they're attacked by bandits. And she, one of the women, gave herself up for the bandit to save everybody.
And she has Surah Levaila?
She has Surah Levaila.
Probably based itself on the Marik. The Marik would be about 250 years before the Nod of Yehuda. So it makes sense that the Nod of Yehuda would have quoted this Marik. Yeah. I think in Shulchan Aruch they quote this Marik, if I'm not mistaken. Shemikavon shemala mala v'isha neseres olavu me'ila niku kola osa v'rotzer afilu ima rotzer azeh ba mi'minias. Minia means for the motivation of Hatzolas Nefashos. But nevertheless, as far as Me'ila is concerned, it's still considered Me'ila. Now, here's a Mordechai that's already one of the Rishonim. He says, Shekolz Machel Gilsa Estel HaChashver Shes Ama Umaladita Yachol HaYom Mordechai Lismoch HaKach Shei Nev'eles the onus below berots, and she can ilu haya zemir tzona re shekvar hoysa megalalo es ama. If she would submit herself willingly, she would also probably admit to him, you know, in that intimate relationship, that she was born Jewish. Ulo ka'es misha omda lahagid liachashverish mihu ama. Now that she's about to go into Ahasuerus and reveal her true origins, shuv lo yelo lemardchai sima liftoch ba she'ena osis os mirotzon. Okay, this is really a chiddush of the Mordechai. The Masechta Sanhedrin hikshu al Rabbi Yochanan she'omer shal averus b'far heser yehorik val yavor, and the Gemara answers that Esther was Karkaola. And then the Gemara gives another answer that the Harik Val Yavar is only if he is Lavar al Das, but here it was Lahana also Kavis Kavin. Okay, I'm saying this very quickly because I want to see if I can get to a punchline here. He says, Akashverosh Lahanos Atzel Vadis Kavin. So Hikshu Hatosvis, Gemara, the Tosvis in Sarajan asks, Fagmadu Hikshu Sa Gemara. But then, what's kasher avadati? Avadati. That's the Rivam is going to argue against Rabbeinu Tam based on the fact that kasher avadati avadati. And Rabbeinu Tam is going to have to answer something along the lines of the Marik, that even though there's no Yehari Val Yavar, but nevertheless she becomes Asur Labaila because she made this decision to go in. Ulam harivam cholek al Rabbeinu Tam, so v'sheshchiv b'siris nefesh al bias akum kebuchol arayas. El shezeh yod'ok var ha-gemorah shekarka olam shayni. So Gemara knew that she would not have an obligation to give up a life because she was karka olam, she was totally passive, and there's no mesiras nefesh here. Ulam Rabbi Yochanan shechoshes l'chil Hashem v'osar b'chol aviros b'farhesya hava mina delo mahani. So why is this called farhesya? I have no clue. Maybe the fact that she agreed to marry Achashverosh, that's called farhesya. Because the Jewish people knew that she was living with a god.
I mean, she just told everybody, praying that I'm going to go to the king. I mean, she told everybody to fast for 3 days. She pretty much announced she's going to be going to the king. So
right, but not necessarily for a sexual escapade. But I guess you could understand.
You know,
maybe for sexual. So I don't know, he doesn't... You know, when he gets to the punchline, he doesn't mention exactly why this is considered farhesya. Again, so I guess all of Klal Yisrael knew that she was having this relationship. But it seems to me that that's true from the inception of the marriage. Unless they assumed that until now it was be'onis, and now it becomes be'rotzon. So therefore she'd have to give up her life. Oh, here's an interesting kasha from Tosfos in Sanhedrin. Tosfos wants to know, Madua Mordechai lo gireish osa lifnei lechto lemelech? Why couldn't our Mordechai deliver a get and then she would be a grusha and this would not be gilui arayos? He had mutal olatzirach. And not only that, he would be allowed to remarry because there's no marriage to a god.
Right.
Shekei rak nisa liachar gerusha asur labayla aval nevelas liachar muteras labayla. The Tirzah Tosfos mikaven shekol ma'aseh get einu ela al pi edim. Pachad Mordechai sheivada adobel lemelech.
That's just
whoa. So what does it mean? It's pikuach nefesh here. You know, you really have to, really balance. You know, you have to. On the one end, you know, you want to save her from gila, right? So the other end, he doesn't want to get his head handed to him. Hiksha rash bal tirs atosvim she'imi shum hachi shepachet shmei apirsim she'yesh l'shtar im shnei edim ha'yochol agar shemiget she'nitha b'ksav yad ha'bal Shukasha aflu lo eivim.
Wow. Now we have to learn a second gittin.
So what's the issue that he's worried about?
Two eivim. In order to give a get, he has to have the signature of two eivim.
Okay.
We always assume that as soon as the signature of two eivim, the word will get out. And if the word will get out, then he's going to be put to death because he's having a relationship with, as if she's his wife, and yet she's the wife of Ahasuerus.
But why is that something to worry about? Weren't there at least two eivim when they got married?
When who got married? When Mordechai got married?
Yeah. When they got married, you have the same issue with just the fact that they're married getting out.
See, you probably, have to know, to be a Bucky in Hilchus Gittin v'Kiddushin. There's a whole
married,
scene.
You don't need to get married.
Yeah, there's something cool.
You don't need Aiden to get married.
Yeah, I don't know. You have to know whether Aiden's the Kiddushin is Aiden's
the Kiddushin. But would they have gotten married in private if they did? Because they got married
before. Well, listen,
before
Eric, whatever the answer
knew,
to your question is...
Yeah.
You have to admit that Ahasuerus did not know that she was married to Mordechai.
Yes.
How he didn't know that, that's your kasha. But the metzius is, he had no clue that she was married to Mordechai.
But I guess the divorce...
At that particular occasion, in which Mordechai sends a get to his wife with two eidim signed on it...
I guess, why would that be less of a risk than the fact that people already know that they're married?
Again, I guess it was not... You know, it was the people.
They could have been married from out of town. They could be anybody.
How would it be before Hesia? Then you have the question of this being before Hesia. If people didn't know they were married, then it wouldn't have been before Hesia.
Let's just see whatever we can. Vayhi bayom hashlishi. You with me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Vayhi Bayom Hashlishi. So I have here a footnote. Why did Esther wait 3 days? So he quotes a number of Mefarshim here. Esther Hintina Liyom Hashlishi Kidesh Tatzliach Bishlichusa. Bizchus Torah Neviim Uksuvin. So the number 3 is very critical. Like we have 3 Aliyos, right? Torah Neviim Uksuvin. Bizchus Kohanim Leviim Yisrael. Bizchus Moshe Aaron and Miriam. Bizchus Shlosh Yisimei Hagbola Shebo Nidno Torah after Yom Hashlishi. So there are a number of explanations as to why she thought the number 3 was a critical number. Vatilbash Esther Malchus. Why do I think we learned this Gemara?
There was a mention with Malchus when it was talking about her Nevi'im Nevu'ah.
So this is a repeat of a Gemara that we just had.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. Vatilbash Esther Malchus. Big day Malchus, we boil. It should have said Big day Malchus. Omer Abloz, Omer Abim Chanina, Melani Shalavashata, Ruach HaKodesh. That Ruach HaKodesh was Shar Sal Leha. And therefore the word Malchus here is not a reference to Big Day Malchus, but rather to the Ruach, which is called Malchus. The Haraya. How do we know that the word Ruach could be indicated by Malchus? Or he says here, Varaya Sheshayach Lomal Ruach, Beinim Zuruach HaKodeshim Zuruach Gvura V'Ratzal Loshan Levisha. So it was Vatilbash was saying that the word Malchus is a reference to Ruach and specifically Ruach HaKodesh, but what is Vatilbash? And the answer is Ksiv Hocha Vatilbash Uksiv Hosam V'Ruach Lovsha Es Amosai. And the Ruach here of Amosai, which is Lovsha, is the Ruach Ratzon Ugvura. Now here I have a long footnote giving you the background here, so we'll just very quickly go through this. B'eisha barach David mishol. Shol is out there to kill David. His chavim mitzuda. V'yavo anashim ibn yamin u'miyehuda l'schaver elav. David chashad b'hem. Shemayan she'shol heim u'vakshim u'tovso. So these were actually friends of David, but he couldn't know. Now, Echad me'anoshim shebol shomaya Amosai. But one of the people in this entourage that came to join David HaMelech,
was this fellow named Amasai, and he was the son of Avigail. The Ruach Ratzon Lov Shahos, so become Lidaber El David, Bavur Hanoshim Halol. Shestovasa Shal David Hemavaksh. So he, Amasai, was the one who would convince David that he could trust these people, that they were really friends, and they were loyal to David. Who Eino Tzarach Lashosh with them, you don't have to be afraid of them. So that's what the Pasuk means, that Ruach Lov Shah Es Amasai, the Ruach of a power of gvura and courage, sort of dressed up Amasai, you know, like it sort of surrounded Amasai. Now, at this point, the Gemara does what it often does, and it goes you a shalsheles of Mesoras HaTorah, because we had before a statement of Rabbi Lazar in the name of Rabbi Chanina. Am I right? Let's just go back and see. Where was it? Okay. Om Rabbi Lazar, Om Rabbi Chanina, Malami Shalof Shasa, Ruach HaKodesh. So now another statement. Om Rabbi Lazar, Om Rabbi Chanina, Li Olam Tehi Birchas Hejot Kala, Al Tehi Birchas Hejot Kala, Dei Necha. Did I skip something?
No, I'm just thinking, I'm looking at the time and I don't want to be late if we're about to start a new sugya.
No, it's not a new sugya, it's just it's really just two sentences, two comments of Rabbi Lazar in the name of Rabbi Chanina. And he says basically, when you have someone who's lower on the echelon than you are, and he gives you a bracha, sometimes you're mezalzel, you don't take it seriously. He's an adam pashut. He's a rank and file citizen. So he says, no, be careful. Take it very seriously. You never know where that bracha will take you. Then he's going to flip it around and talk about a klala of an adam pashut. That also you have to take seriously if he curses you. Shrei shnei gedoli adar, berachum shnei hegyotos, v'niskaim bohen. There were two greats, and they were blessed by two run-of-the-mill type people, or relative to them, they were run-of-the-mill type people. They were greats also, they were all right, but not relative to David and Daniel. David de Barche Arvana, and this is a whole parasha in the Torah that Arvana was the king of a place called Mitzudas Tzion, which was called Yevusi, and when they came back from Yerushalayim, at the time that Yehuda conquered Yerushalayim, he came out with a bracha to David HaMelech, and Vayomer Arvana El HaMelech. Now, it's after David purchases from the Yevusi what's called Garno Shel Arvana. He purchases that land and he's going to build a Mizbeach and ultimately the Migdash on that land. Now, this is all during a period of time when David made a big mistake and he counted the people of Israel by heads, and as a result it was a terrible Magefa. And David HaMelech was frantically trying to stop this plague. So Arvana gives David a blessing. And he says, Hashem Elokecha Yirtzecha. And his bracha was actually fulfilled because the Pasuk says, Vayeoser Hashem La'oretz Vateotzer Hamagefa Me'al Yisrael. And Daniel Dibarache Daryavash. Now Daniel is going to be thrown into a hot furnace and he gets a blessing from the very same king who threw him into the hot furnace. That's the paradox here. The Tziv Elohach Diant, your God Holach Le B'tidira, that you worship him continuously, constantly. Hu Yishez Vinach, he will save you. So Daryavash really loved Daniel. He was under tremendous pressure from his Sariah Malchus to throw Daniel into the Gov. I said the furnace, but that was Hanani Mishal. Sorry, into the Gov Arayos. And as a result, you know, Daryavash is on the one hand doing what he has to do, but on the other hand, he's hoping that that Daniel will survive miraculously, and he bestows a bracha on Daniel that his God, Daniel's God, which to whom he prays and he worships, will save him. And in fact, Daniel was saved. Maybe we'll just read one more line, if we can. Maybe we shouldn't. Okay. I'm always tempted to try to copyright another line here. So let's make a note where we got up to. The Ode of Rabbi Elazar. And Amir Shem, tomorrow we'll swing it over to Tesvav on the base. Okay.